I know you've all been waiting for these biblical quotations. And one that was very hard for me for a long time to feel at peace with was the one of "Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." And being a perfectionist, that's, you know, is thinking, oh, this is not going to work. Great. So the idea of perfection gave me food for thought for many years. So I'd like to present a slightly different way of looking at perfection. Our bodies have an amazing design to them. You're all aware of your organs and everything, but you may not be aware of how the mind and body works together. If we can come to a place of acceptance that our bodies, as they are right now, are perfect. There's nothing really we need to do differently. No change has to be made. That as they exist in this moment is perfect. So, and I'll want to read a couple of more quotations. God, who sets the sun to shine in the heavens, himself chooses to be found in the darkness. I have built for you a house. Be pleased to dwell therein forever. I said to you, be mine. I have chosen you. I will not abandon you. Fear not, for I am your God. Let's talk about this house that was built for us and the perfection of the design that God gave us in our body. Little known facts about your body. One is that in less than a year, you replace 98% of all the atoms in your body. Your liver in 6 weeks, your stomach in 5 days, skin in a month. Red blood cells have a lifespan of 120 days, your skeleton in 3 months, and in less than 3 years, virtually your entire body has been replaced. So when you talk about the body, it's not fixed in stone, it's not a frozen structure, it's a dynamic living being that is constantly renewing itself. Unfortunately for us, we tend to renew in the same pattern as before instead of a pattern that's more comfortable. But I want to show you how you can change the patterns of the body. You're familiar with your body. You can see it and touch it, and you can have a sense that there are things inside your body. But there are information pathways, highways throughout your body, where information is flowing from cell to cell in this complicated, integrated, dynamic, fluctuating, vibrating, pulsating being. And the body, we can use a way of describing it that's not entirely accurate, but it's a good starting point. To think that the mind is telling the body what to do. If you want to take a drink of water, your arm lifts up and voluntarily you take a drink. Well, you have another mind besides the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, that's in charge of regulating all your internal body processes. So it's adjusting the pressure in the eyes. It's regulating the little cilia that come up your trachea. It's regulating the blood pressure and exchange of ions so that your system is maintaining a homeostasis. It has a very narrow band of balance that it maintains. It knows how to do this without you telling your body what to do. It maintains your body temperature, your acidity in your blood, and on and on and on. So if consciously we can tell our body what to do, and if subconsciously our mind is also telling our body what to do, what's the connection between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind and the body? Well, it's very interesting. It turns out that your conscious mind is the part that judges and analyzes and makes decisions and all those things that we're aware of. The subconscious mind's only job is to keep you alive. So it doesn't judge, it simply does. It's like a computer that runs the software. The software is the conscious programming. We plug it into the computer. The computer doesn't judge whether it's good or bad. It just runs it, and it comes out the printer. So the pattern in our body that we can feel and touch has been developed by the pattern presented to it from the mind. We want to begin to use that mind-body connection for our benefit so that instead of feeling like we're out of control, that our body has a mind of its own, we establish a relationship with self and know that some part of me, even though I'm not conscious of it, it is my mind that is telling my body to tense up my muscles, for example. As rather than blaming self and saying, well, I caused this illness or I'm responsible and everything, use it as an opportunity to begin to make positive changes in your body. As soon as you notice something like, oh, I'm acting as if I'm scared or I'm acting as if this is going on, then you notice the body's doing something you don't want it to do. So you begin to talk to the body and say, okay, body, that's an old pattern. It no longer serves me. In this moment now, I choose to, and then you begin to work with the body a little bit at a time. Because the body really does listen to us. And if we're willing to listen to the body to notice our gut feelings about things, we can begin to take better care of ourselves. There's been a tremendous amount of research done over the last 20 years about the mind-body connection. And this started originally with clinicians who were working with patients who had cancer. And they were able to teach people that yes, you do have a physical condition and it needs to be treated medically, but there's also another element that we want to begin to address, that concept of healing. How can you find comfort in yourself? So they started to teach people visualization and relaxation training. Some of those people, when they entered into a relationship with their body of trust, listening to the pain and illness, meditating and relaxing, learning about themselves, some of those people actually reversed their illness. There are 450 documented cases in the literature of cures. And there's many more than that that haven't been documented. But interesting things happen when you are willing to notice. Another nice quote. You, our God, are good and faithful, slow to anger. You order all things with kindness. We are yours. We know your power. And we rest in you, even in our imperfection. But we would not sin if we were more attentive. So, to be show you a technique to get more attentive with this body of yours, to begin to notice that there is a mind-body connection. to know that there's possibilities that of things that we may not have allowed ourselves. I have other research here. But some of it's kind of obvious. They did a study in the New England Journal of Medicine where they reported that stress increases your chances of getting an upper respiratory infection, where doing relaxation training allows psoriasis to clear more quickly. And it goes on and on and on, and I won't go give you all of that, but just the concept that our body is not fixed in time. And we can begin to let this aliveness move and work for us. Repatterning the body, letting go of limitations, injuries, being able to live in this moment now. So I'm going to have you do a very short meditation. To explore this body, to discover yourself. I always sit on my sitting bones and rest my feet on the floor such that my ankles are under my knees, and that way there's no effort to holding my knees up. I just work with gravity instead of fighting gravity. Resting my hands on my thighs and close my eyes and just take a moment to breathe and give myself permission to relax. Make adjustments in my weight and dropping my shoulders down or getting some of the kinks out. And now I'm going to let my hands rest on my thighs without moving them. Let them rest comfortably. Feel the weight of your hands. Now, without moving the hands, just using your mind to notice, I want you to go down to your hands and see what they feel like. Do you notice if one hand feels just slightly heavier than the other? Or perhaps lighter, warmer, cooler, tingling, pulsing, whatever you may find. You don't want your hands to be touching because that'll give you a little different information. And you don't want to move the hands because each time you move the hands, that again changes the signal that goes back to your brain. Now just write a few notes down for yourself in your mind with what you've discovered about the hands. Because for most of us, there is just a slight difference. One hand is slightly heavier or lighter. There may be tingling. And just notice whether it's the whole hand or just the fingertips. At first, you might not notice because the mind is so busy, but as you begin to focus and listen, you'll discover interesting things like that perhaps the fingertips are just a little bit cooler on one hand than the other. Notice what you find, make a note of it, and now I'm going to ask you to pick a finger and tap it up and down a couple times. Tap, tap, just a couple times is enough. And notice whether it felt normal or, you know, moved freely, anything unusual about it. Usually it moves the way we expect it to. In a moment, I'm going to have you move that same finger again. But first, I want you to slow down. Slow your mind. Slow your breathing. And the next time you move the finger, you're going to do so ever so slowly, just a hair at a time, lifting up. And you'll lift it up until you notice a change in the sensation of the finger. Before you begin to lift the finger, I want you to do a little exercise. I want you to bring to mind a time in your life where you were feeling particularly healthy and happy, on top of the world. It might have been when you were a young child running outside, or might have been a special event in your life, might have been going hunting, who knows. Just pick one. Pick one where you really felt good that day. Body was relaxed, you were happy. You're feeling so good. And let that memory grow strong in your body so that every cell remembers those same feelings of what it was like to be happy and free and light, to have the breath move through your nostrils, to feel the air and sun around you. When that feeling is really strong in your body so that every cell remembers those feelings, then go down to the finger and begin to move it ever so slowly up in the air until you notice a change in the finger. As soon as you notice a change, rest it back down again. Allow yourself to rest again. Now, when you do this exercise and really are still and quiet, you can actually feel the tendon pulling the bone as you lift the finger up. But it requires focus, stillness, and slowing down your mind to notice. Now, I want you to make a mental note of what that felt like. Some of you might have had trouble getting the finger to start lifting up. Some of you might have noticed the finger wobbled. Some of you might not have noticed anything. It really felt without much sensation. Make a mental note. And again, resting the hands, go back and notice if the hands still feel the same as before you lifted the finger up. Is that one hand still slightly heavier or tingly? And notice any other sensations in the body. Now, I'm going to ask you to become aware of the finger on the opposite hand, not the finger you moved, but the corresponding one. And I want you to know that there is a wire that runs from that finger all the way up your arm into the part of your brain that is connected to the subconscious mind, that part of you whose only job is to keep you alive. Now, we're going to ask the subconscious a question. And the question is, inner self, I want to know if it's okay for me to give myself permission to be perfectly healthy, if that's what's best for me. And inner self, I want you to show me in a tangible way what your answer is. Either a change in sensation of the finger or tapping or any other change. And now take a moment, being still, to notice just what happens in the body. Oftentimes, a small change occurs. Sometimes not. And regardless of whether you notice the change or not, you can still say to yourself, yes, I do give myself permission to be perfectly healthy, both now and in the future. I know that my mind and body are working together for my good. Now ask the body, is there any one particular thing that I really need to do right now in my life to restore balance or to maintain this balance or to move this balance into a more positive direction that I desire, and see what the answer is. Because if I am committed to nourishing myself, if I have done all the things that I know how to do, I've had my body examined by a health practitioner, I'm eating good food, I'm addressing stress. If I'm doing all that I can do to help myself, then I can just trust my body that it will heal naturally. Now continue with your eyes closed and listen to these words. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. In God I live, move, and have my being. In God I live, move, and have my being. Humbly and patiently, I point myself in a better direction toward God. Humbly and patiently, I point myself in a better direction toward God. A good woman, man, trusts God, believing and certain in his knowledge that God is good and that because of divine goodness and love, it is impossible that God should let adversity befall anyone, except he intended to spare that person much greater or to prepare him for a nobler earthly comfort, or he intended something better to come of it, something still more compatible with divine honor. So take in a long, slow, deep breath and claim this body for you. I am alive. The living presence of God lives in my being. And deep in myself is an eternal source. And I can see the beauty within me and all around me. I am safe and protected. And when you're ready, open your eyes. We can have discussion for those of you who want to stay about the mind-body connection. Those who have to leave, feel free to. Any observations? Did anyone notice a slight difference between their hands?
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's tingling here. thinking about it, I thought it was a little thing, but then I was just starting to think that you might think that it was looking at it was. And he said, you know, do you notice anything that's heavier? And I went, no, no. But I did notice that this was lighter.
Yeah. Now, did you get that tingling in response to the question to your inner self? Or was that, did anyone have a notice a change after we asked the question? Did you? Okay. It's very subtle.
Yeah, because this hand was heavier on the palm, like a finger palm, and my fingers like this, but after the question was asked, my fingers kind of got lighter, but the palm was still heavy.
Yeah. Oftentimes our mind is so busy it doesn't notice. And our body doesn't require much of us. A little bit of food, a little water, and in the moment to just notice, how do I feel? And then...
What is it that we keep pulling up the tapes that say, you know, I didn't feel good yesterday, so you forget to ask on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we keep feeding ourselves with that notion that we're sick, we're broken. Instead of, if we fed ourselves, like Norman Shealy is a well-known clinician in the body-mind field. And he says, if you made a short phrase for yourself, and you just said that every day, 1,000 times a day, I'm not sure what time frame he put on it, whether it was a month or 2 months, but your body would just make changes in response to that. All is well. Every opportunity to say all is well. Because now all may not be well with my body. My body may be dying of cancer, but there's a part of me that is well. And as I begin to claim that, I can actually learn about how to get greater and greater well-being in my body. And overcome fear, because it's actually fear that does a great deal of harm to us. If I told you a story, I think Deepak does this. Did you write that down? Imagine that you've gone sightseeing on a special trip, and you're on this building, and you've walked out onto this beautiful veranda. Let's say it's a beautiful place. You're in Israel or something, and there's these flowers, and you're standing there, and you notice in the street market below you all the colors, and so you're looking over there at what extraordinary sight it is, and all of a sudden someone comes up and pushes you from behind. I mean, you know, you tell that story, and people in their bodies, you know, will suddenly tense up. Now, it didn't really happen to them, but they thought... You know, the thought and the fear and all of that created a biochemical event in their body. So we must be careful about our thinking, more so than most of us. We've been taught, be careful, that could be dirty. Don't drink from dirty glasses. Unless you had my mother who said, a little dirt never hurt you, but... careful, those people are sick over there. You'll get something from them. And it's in subtle ways we are teaching ourselves that we are vulnerable, that something outside of us can hurt us. And when you affirm that those little bacteria are like the lowest form of life on the planet, and I'm a highly evolved being, you know, that's no way that this thing is anything more than a scavenger. If I find a way to keep myself alive, a living flesh, then I won't have these little scavengers that come in as if I'm, you know, rotting or something. And now, there are pitfalls in the... working with this mind-body connection. One is that people tend to feel guilty as if they have control over their illness. And there are things we have control over. We have control over this moment now if I choose to breathe, if I choose to feel angry, fearful, or guilty. But we're human beings, and in our humanity, some of us are going to have cancer, some of us are going to have heart trouble, and we can't really take it personally when those things happen. Some of us have gone out of our way to kill ourselves. We drink and smoke and, you know, promiscuous and do all kinds of things, and they live to a ripe old age of, you know, 100. And some people are very innocent. They've done nothing in their lives. So we use the events in our lives as an opportunity to do some healing without judgment. How to open ourselves to loving kindness and mercy. And learning how to claim our power as a spiritual being, using that power wisely.
One thing we were discussing the other day was Gail had said that, you know, people coming up from, you know, outsiders come in and they might bring a virus or something, and then it circulates around and some people get sick. And, you know, like Paula was saying, if, you know, viruses and microbes and whatever are, they can affect somebody, but if they had power over us, why doesn't everybody get sick? You know, why do only certain people get sick when things like that come in? And the idea that puts in my mind is, especially, you know, I see a lot of sick people. Well, if I get the idea that, you know, this is contagious and I'm going to get this and I'm going to get sick, then I probably will. But if I get the idea that I don't have to be sick, I don't have to catch this from this person, then I don't get it. You know, and, you know, so if you just look at why do some people get sick with everything that comes around, and why don't some people? I mean, to me, it suggests there's another element other than this bug that's going around. There's something else playing in there.
When I was a little kid, I got sick with everything all the time. And I was the little white, puny kid in the corner. And then these robust, pink-cheeked farming kids were there, and they never got sick. And that went on till I got into medical school, and suddenly I never got sick. I was like, huh, how is this possible? I don't understand it. And so I like to think of it that, you know, it's a way of learning about ourselves and try to particularly free us from judgment, because that causes more harm. And illness is hard enough to deal with.
You want to tell that throat story?
Well, yeah, I had a young girl come to the office, you know, who's about 9, and she had a sore throat. And this was in the early days of my practice, where I was trying to figure out how to be a useful doctor. And she had come in and seen 2 or 3 other doctors before me in a very short time frame, but had sore throat, sore throat, sore throat. And they looked in, and they thought it was red, and they gave her an antibiotic, and it never went away. And so she came in, I think, well, clearly we're not helping you. You know, the typical doctor stuff of, here, take this, isn't working. So I said, what's going on in this girl's life right now? Just tell me, let me get to know you, you know, what's happening in your life. And the mother said, well, the big change in our life is that my dad is dying of cancer. And she used to always take naps with him. And when she got a cold, then she couldn't sleep with him anymore because he could get sick from her. And she's... she loves her grandpa. And I said, well, you know, I told her, explained what I found. I found a healthy-looking throat. It's a little red, but really it really is quite healthy. And you've had enough antibiotics to clear out any microbes that could possibly have been there. And perhaps we should look at whether what's happening in her throat is her feelings, that she's feeling sad. And the mother thought about it, and she said, well, you know, I do the same thing when I'm sad. My throat hurts, too. And this little girl, we could then say to her, you know, you love your grandpa, and the pain that you're feeling isn't anything wrong with you. It's really is the it's the price you pay for loving somebody, in a sense, you can say. It's okay to have a heartache or a throat ache. That's the way our bodies work. And you're just learning about yourself. Now, so go home, rest, drink fluids. You can have a nap with your grandpa. You know, it's okay. And so that for after that, then I started noticing more and more people like that, that what was going on in their body really reflected what was going on in their life. And so I didn't have to rescue them with medical treatment. I just helped them listen to their bodies and trust the body, that the body's not broken. It's doing what it does. And if we, by virtue of the fact that our body can create illness, we have that same power to create health. You know, if the thoughts and feelings and beliefs we're having are creating agony, and that's showing up in the physical body, then perhaps by moving us into a new realm of understanding, of awareness and of attitude, then the body will begin to also manifest that too in our lives. So stress is a powerful force right now, and we're not equipped. We're not living in the same world that our parents lived in, and we're not really equipped. We're going to need new tools to move into this next century. So, anyway, that's food for thought for you.
I have a question as far as your practice. When somebody comes to you, like I see in the hospital, they continue to, keep coming back, being readmitted when I was working at the hospital. And also I see a few people here in the village who are, having these problems because of the smoking or, the addictive behavior, whatever. How do you address that when somebody comes to see you to try to get them, to say, this is happening because of your cigarette smoking or...
Yeah. Well, my aim is, number one, to let the person know that they are making active choices. And the choices that they're making make sense to them, given all that's happened in their life. And so I certainly am not going to take away cigarettes from them if that's filling a need. But then they begin to be honest with them and look at what they're doing and see, well, what is the real need there? And I really want to come to a person from a point of respect and honor and it's perfectly okay with me if you smoke. You, however, may not like what it creates in your body. And you might want to feel more comfortable. And most people really are wanting to feel more comfort. And so they're not wanting to be judged or changed or anything. They really, I think most of us, the one thing that's missing in our life is to be valued for who we are, to have friends who can just listen to us and not try to fix us or anything. And so with my patients, help them learn about themselves, help them make choices, and mostly give them the knowledge that this is not as good as it gets. You were born with a body. When you were a young child, it was joyful. It could do lots of things. And your body's not broken. It still has that same imprint that you came into the world with. There's some things we can't change, like if you have degeneration of your disc or something like that, or you had surgery and something was taken out. We can't change that, but we can still regain a state of grace, of suppleness in our body. The thing about addiction and all that kind of stuff, I feel like there's good reasons why we harm ourselves. We don't, you know, we... I'm not really equipped to speak on that fully. I'm learning about that myself. I am aware of things of... I don't do it anymore, but you know, I quit smoking when I started medical school because I thought it was a good idea to be a little healthier minded. And you know, why do I make the choices I make? Am I really taking care of myself, or am I acting as if the world has got the best of me, and you know, I have to lead this life of suffering or something? And I particularly am one who've always done it the hard way. So giving myself permission to be open to nurturing from self and from others, and the being, giving myself permission to be honest. I always considered myself to be an incredibly honest person, and could see things that other people I knew were in denial about. Life was not all that rosy. There's a lot of pain and suffering, and I felt I was pretty well grounded. But it took me years and years later to realize, you know, at some point I lie to myself. I'm not willing to ask for what I want, and it's a lie. I know what I want. And it may sound a bit harsh to you, but learning to be honest about my true feelings, that I have doubt, I have negativity, I'm scared of things. I used to think I was fearless. Well, I don't know how I ever thought that, because truth is, there's a lot of fear around. And then the sense of failure. I mean, here I am, I've gone to medical school, I've raised myself, you know, achieved great things compared to my roots of where I came from, and yet I'm still not good enough. There's still a sense of failure. And if I haven't failed in one realm, I've probably failed in another realm. I've probably permanently damaged my body. And all these thoughts kind of come around, and I really have to stop and say, you know, whatever the truth is to that, there's still another reality here, that I can be a woman of spirit to not judge myself, to enjoy the beauty around me. And before I came out here, I was laying on the couch thinking, oh no, God, I've got to come out to this workshop. I'm not ready, it's not right, and I'm a failure, and how am I going to teach them about acceptance when I can't accept myself? Going on and on. And then it finally came to me, you know, what you do, the way you learn about something is you live it. So... We're human. Any other comments?
The other thing that we talked about a little bit earlier, I was thinking, I've been here almost a year, and as you live at Holden, the materialism, I mean, it's, you can be here, and you know, it's not the materialism here. And so then you go out. Now I'm going to be going out for 3 weeks. And I think it's really hard to separate yourself from that materialism. And I think that the materialism causes a lot of what we're talking about, because we get so caught up with it. And then we have these expectations, and then, you know, if we don't meet them, then we have a failure and so forth. So it's going to be, because I really haven't been able to be gone for a long period of time, and this is kind of helping me to say, how is that going to affect me now when I, mm-hmm. when I go out there? How can I be more observant and quiet and not kind of get caught up, because I'm already just thinking, oh, well, I'm going to go to a movie every other day. You know, and I'm going to do this. And, I mean, you have to have some plans, of course, but I think that the materialism in our world, or particularly in the United States here, is hard to not get caught up into.
Finding a way to protect yourself and separate yourself that doesn't build barriers, but that establishes boundaries, that this is mine and that's not mine. It's one of the things I've been working on, of how to create a nest for myself that will allow me to survive in a world that doesn't honor us, really, in a world that has incredible fear and anxiety and things. So, one woman, and I thought this was quite interesting, she's a medical student and was on her psychiatry rotation, which psychiatry, you know, you're learning about getting a grip on life, right? She said it drove her nuts to the point where she had have to go 3 or 4 times a day and close herself in the bathroom and just meditate to kind of reground herself in her reality and not get stressed by that. And so depending upon what you're being faced with, whether it's a physical illness that's incredibly challenging, or a crisis in the family emotionally or whatever, financial problems, you might have to, rather than just doing 5 minutes a day of time to check in with yourself, you might 3 or 4 times a day have time to really be silent and close off the senses and get in touch with that part of you that's a living you, that is untouched by the stress. We allow ourselves to be greatly affected by what goes on around us. And because there's lots of reasons why we do that. We'll say things like, if I didn't get unhappy about this, then I must not care enough. So this is a problem and I want to show how much I care, so I'm going to get unhappy about it. Or, you know, there's a whole litany of things we go through to create stress and tension in our bodies, to be affected by what goes on, rather than being unmoved by and unmoved emotionally, but still taking action in your life. Like, I have this desire, and I want to move forward toward this desire, but I'm unmoved by the fear and stress and tension and anxiety that's going on around me. So, anybody else? Because we can...
Lunchtime.
Lunchtime!
I often find myself feeling things in my body, you know, kind of gut feeling about, but I feel it, you know, but I don't know quite what to do with it once I feel it, you know. How do I take action from that point? It's kind of where I get stuck.
Yeah.
You know, like, even yesterday after the session last night, you know, okay, I was in the, what is my body telling me to do? And I was like walking around in circles. I was like, all right, what am I doing? You know, it took a long time to finally end up where I ended up. You know, I went through all these little doors.
And yeah.
That's what it felt like anyway.
Well, stick with it. Your intellectual mind will say, enough of this silliness. But somehow we have to have a dialogue with ourselves. And I'll go through a phase where it's just like, oh, give me a break. This is too crazy, confusing. what am I supposed to be learning from all of this? But if we just keep at it, checking in with ourselves and trusting ourselves, not having an answer right away, and the answer might come later too. And being Walt Disney has a 25-year plan, business plan. Yeah, they have really kind of thought it out and everything. And I thought, golly, you know, I am incredibly impatient. Perseverance, 25-year plan, you know, to stick with something and really make that commitment. Mm-mm. We live in the world of instant gratification, microwave, television, you name it, you know. So stick with it. Be persevere. Don't be in too big of a rush. I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping 50 is better than 40 and, you know, that kind of stuff.